Time to get our view from the middle. Find his work for USA Today. Go online. Visit usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. He's our Wednesday leadoff guy, Mr. Schroeder. How are you doing these days?
I'm good. How are you?
All is well. All is well. And I know we've discussed where the Big 12 might be as far as examining the potential to expand, but I want to focus on what you wrote about Oklahoma. You spoke with Sooner President David Boren. Beyond the specifics of this situation, he's an Ivy Leaguer, a Rhodes Scholar. He was a senator, governor of Oklahoma. George, safe to say this guy, pretty unique, not your everyday college administrator.
Well, I think that's right. And obviously, the listeners in Eugene, if they recall the name David Boren, they remember him from the replay gate thing in 2006 when Oregon won controversially from the Oklahoma standpoint in Austin, and then David Boren popped off afterwards. And at the time, it was pretty apparent he was pandering to his political base, which is, going back to what you just said, I mean, the guy understands constituents and a political base. But, you know, most university presidents are politicians of a sort. They've risen through the politics of an academic community. This guy has, you know, had succeeded at the higher levels of politics. And so that kind of makes him a little bit different bird than the average university president. Sometimes I think when he plays academic politics, he's playing chess when those other university presidents are playing checkers.
Ooh, good one. I like that. So when the issue of expansion first surfaced, Boren famously quoted with psychologically disadvantaged after his league was snubbed out of that first college football playoff. But last Thursday in Norman, you used the word retreat. What were some of the key themes he hit on about where the league is now on this seemingly ongoing issue?
Well, it was about 11 months ago. It was last June after a different regents meeting that he used that term, the Big 12 being psychologically disadvantaged because they had 10 members. They were not like, didn't play a conference championship game, were not like the other Power 5 leagues. And, of course, the context then was the first season of the college football playoff when TCU and Baylor finished tied atop the standings and finished fifth and sixth and got leapfrogged in the final, you know, the poll that mattered in the selection committee standings by Ohio State. And didn't get in the playoff. You know, since then, the Big 12 got into the playoff. And by the way, it was Oklahoma. So he was actually asked about psychologically disadvantaged. He said he didn't feel like Oklahoma was psychologically disadvantaged. And he wasn't sure the league was. This was last Thursday he was talking. That he thought the league was in a pretty strong position. Basically, he walked back all the things he had said, not just last June, but last January and last February. You know, 4 or 5 months ago, he walked everything back and he basically said, I'm not necessarily for expansion for the sake of expansion if we don't think we need it. What I think we need is a conference television network in order to, you know, get better revenues. And if you're going to have a conference network, if it makes sense for revenue, then you might need to expand for inventory's sake for the conference network, which, you know, I don't know what anybody thinks about that. But it's all a significant retreat, frankly, than what he'd been saying. So it felt like he dialed things back a little bit. I don't know if that means he's read the writing on the wall and it's the writing he wanted or what. But, you know, it could also be that he's still playing a bit of a multi-layered game. There's no way to know.
Yeah, you mentioned, I guess, inventory. And obviously here in the Pac-12, I mean, with the Olympic sports, be it track and field and polo and everything else, I mean, they roll out stuff on the Pac-12 network that is eternal. And it seems like they can adequately fill. Is that really the primary issue that's holding back? Because to tell you the truth, it didn't even dawn on me. Huh, they've got a Longhorn network, but they don't have a Big 12 network.
Yeah, you know, that... It's not even so much the inventory from the Olympic sports that you're talking about. Sorry, the UPS truck just went by. I'm standing outside.
Gotcha.
It's not the inventory from the other sports. It's frankly adding the inventory from football. You have to have enough. You would get 24 more games if you added to two new schools, for example,
right.
24 more games. And I guess that's not exactly right, or maybe it is. I don't know. I have to look at the math. But you need more inventory in order to split games up among the television partners you already have and whoever a conference network would be. And that's what you're really talking about. I mean, there would be plenty of inventory in terms of, you know, volleyball and softball and those types of things, and baseball. So that's really the primary driver of expansion would be the inventory for a conference network, which to me is not a great reason to expand, quite frankly. The other thing is this. You're betting on a conference network bringing a ton of money in. Well, the Pac-12 would tell you that hadn't happened yet there. In their case, of course, part of that's because they went it alone. They didn't use TV. They didn't use a TV partner, and so they assumed all the costs. But still, I'm not sure that ESPN, which is what this would have to be, because you've got to get out of the Longhorn Network, which is an ESPN deal, and into a conference network. I'm not sure ESPN, the report from ESPN is going to be, oh, yeah, you guys can make a ton of money. So if they don't get that report that they can make a ton of money, then there's no reason to even try to convince Texas to dump the Longhorn Network, and there's no reason to think about expanding.
All righty. I might be a numbers and financial geek. I actually just love all this stuff. Last week, the ACC announced they're going to be the first league to do a replay command center. The NHL did it in Toronto, and I think it works great. So, as you know, it's not all about just the refs on the field and a replay official. They'll be assisted by a crew in Greensboro, North Carolina. You know, obviously a lot of people wonder how much impact the Duke-Miami mess had here. What do you think of this move?
Well, first of all, they're the first to announce it. But the SEC is doing it as well, and it was an SEC proposal that allowed the rule allowed there to be this change in a rule that allows you to do it. So, look, here's what it means strategically. It does not mean that somebody in Greensboro or in Birmingham, in the case of the SEC, that someone there is going to make the call, like happens in the NFL now. What it does mean is that those guys can help by conversing back and forth in real time, as the replay official in the booth who's going to make the call, and the guy in the command center or several people in the command center are both looking at the same replay and bringing up, hey, yeah, but did you see this angle? So it's really just collaboration, and it's about trying to get the calls right. It's about trying to get the calls right more quickly, although you would think the more conversation you have, the more opportunity it is to take longer. That doesn't necessarily have to be the case. I do think this. I think down the road, you're looking at a situation where you could have replays decided from a central command center rather than just collaborated with, which this is. And I think down the road, there's every chance it could be a national command center. I realize that not everybody has the same capabilities in terms of transmission and things like that at different stadiums at the FBS level, but there's no reason why they couldn't make that happen.
Well, as a National Hockey League fan, it works awesome. All right, one general question. We hit on a story yesterday out of Notre Dame. It said Brian Kelly continues his run on blue-chip quarterbacks, landing a guy for 2018. While I'm not saying recruiting isn't critical to the success of a college program, but this kid, Phil Jurkovec, is a high school sophomore, and he could still change his 15-year-old mind. George, has recruiting coverage officially run amok?
No, but that's only because it ran amok four or five years ago when Lane Kiffin was at USC and he got the commitment from the 11-year-old. Remember that?
Yeah.
Still. Who, by the way, if I remember right now, later decommitted and is now a wide receiver at West Virginia, which is to say he ended up being a Division I athlete, but he ended up not being this big-time quarterback. But I think he was 11 or 12. You remember that? And
yeah,
he committed.
Absolutely.
He had his own personal quarterback coach back before that was a thing. And that's when I thought it jumped the shark. It was officially sort of beyond the pale. Was when Lane Kiffin extended sort of the unofficial scholarship offer. You can't actually offer until a certain time. But and the kid committed to USC, and he's not really even a middle schooler.
No, to me, that's just kind of poking fun at some of the lunatics who...
Absolutely. But, you know, 2018, they might actually keep the kid. You know, that's only two signing days away.
Right. I guess that's a good point. Talking with George Schroeder, USA Today. On to the Western Conference Finals. Last week, I asked you, maybe we should start paying attention to the job Billy Donovan is doing. I heard an NBA guy say, unlike many big-name college coaches who go pro, he hasn't been all about power and authority, but, you know, listening to his NBA assistants, kind of learning and being willing to adjust on the fly. Is that accurate?
Well, it sure seems that way. He's taken some flack locally in the Oklahoma City area, and maybe for good reason, frankly, because, you know, they seem like he tinkered with rotations and all sorts of stuff, and things didn't work out well. And I do think there was some learning on the fly going on with him. But I'll say this. I think in the playoffs, he has really adjusted well. I thought he, frankly, at least held his own with and maybe out-coached Greg Popovich, which is saying something. I mean, you're talking about a Hall of Famer there in Greg Popovich. And, you know, it's only one game, but I thought he was really good in game one. I like the way he shortened his bench. Changed his rotations up. He's playing the two big guys together, which not only gave the Spurs a ton of problems, as it turned out, it actually gave the completely different kind of team, the Warriors, a bunch of problems too, at least in game one. We'll see what happens in game two tonight. But I think he's done a tremendous job in the playoffs of sort of showing how quickly he's evolved and knowing what he's doing on the NBA level.
All right, one final question, George. You tweeted it out during the game on Monday. I think when folks think about the Thunder, obviously Durant and Westbrook pop off the page. They held the Warriors to 14 points in the fourth quarter. Can we also emphasize enough how the improvement of their defense has gotten them this far?
No, I don't think – look, I think that is the story you're going to start reading a lot, but I think that's maybe – one of the bigger stories of these playoffs, because one of the things that has held the Thunder back for years has been the fact that they've sort of been, a little bit ambivalent towards playing defense, which you can get away with and outscore people as talented as they are, especially with their top two players, many times in most games in a regular season, but it doesn't beat the best teams in the regular season most of the time, and it rarely beats anybody in the playoffs, especially when you get to the deepest parts of the playoffs. And what we saw against the Mavericks to start with, and you weren't really sure if that meant a whole lot because it was the Mavs, and they're not that good. But then against the Spurs, and then the other night against, you know, at least in game one against the Warriors, was this sort of effort and commitment to defense we have not seen from them. And if, in fact, that is a trend and not just an aberration, then you're looking at sort of the team that people thought could be that good, and you shouldn't consider them a 55-27 regular season team. You should consider them a team that might win the thing and the whole thing. Well, you know, again, I say that in a couple hours we'll know a little bit more.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to it. George, I know it's a little windy there. I actually hear you're among the birds. Follow all his work at usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter at George Schroeder. Always appreciate the time, George. Have a great week.
Yeah, if it's windy in Oklahoma, it must be Wednesday.
Oh, I got you. I see what you did there. You
have or it could be Thursday. I'm just trying to say it's a day in Oklahoma.
Yeah,
so
I got you.
I should have been inside.
Wind over tornado any day. You enjoy, George.
All right, man. Thank you.
Take it easy.